Hello and welcome to another Steelers Depot live stream. As always, I am Alex Kazora. Joining me is Dave Bryan, SteelersDepot.com, here for the next hour to answer all of your Steelers questions. Appreciate you guys hanging out with us tonight. Again, Dave and I here until 8 p.m. Eastern time. Dave, how you doing?
Doing very well. Buckos Depot today. sitting here watching the two outs top of the ninth here with the looks like the Buckos are getting close to get going 5-0 on the season. That's not an April Fool's joke, by the way. When was the last time they started a season 5-0?
Broadcast said 1983. What were you doing in 1983? And can you legally tell us what you were doing in 83, Dave?
Drugs.
All right. Statute of limitation should be fine. All right. Going back here to Pittsburgh again. Pro days wrapping up. Got some mock drafts. Got some news. Been a relatively quiet weekend overall, but officially in draft season, in draft month here, Dave. April 25th will be day one of the 2024 NFL draft. So super excited for that again. Can send in your questions. Dave and I will answer as many as possible until 8 p.m. Eastern time. As always, you can send us a super chat and have your question be guaranteed to be asked and answered as soon as possible. No obligation to do so, but we appreciate it all the same. If not, if you guys could like this video, subscribe to the channel, check out the site on screen, SteelersDepot.com. We would appreciate that. And I want to thank you guys again for those who joined us during the Saturday Walk the Mock annual live stream. A lot of fun, ton of people there, had a good time. We'll do at least one more before the draft begins. But Dave, let's dive into our questions here. The first one comes from our friend Brian Tolini, who says, you both get a chance in the GM chair. Steelers are on the clock at 20. Mims is there along with all three top centers in Jackson Powers Johnson, Graham Barton, and Zach Frazier. Do you take Mims or take your center? A pretty heavy question off the top. What do you think?
I tell you, from where I sit here right today on April 1st and what I've seen tape-wise, it would come down to Mims or JPJ, quite honestly. That to me would be the decision. I watched more Frazier tape after our podcast this morning. I don't think he should be beat up like he's being beat up coming out of that pro day, coming off the injury that he had. I think the tape, you know, expanded tape looks still pretty respectable there. I don't think he's in that 20th overall spot there. I'm kind of getting the feeling he might be there in the second round for them there. So assuming I could gamble and that pay off there, I'd be more apt to pick Mims at 20.
Yeah, this one's really tough. I've gone back and forth on it so much. Again, I think centers fall. I'm confident they will this year, but will they fall all the way? They could fall 10 more spots than they're projected to. But if they're off the board at 51, that's all that really matters. And if you lose out on those top three names, what do you do? So if I had to lean away right now, watching more of Barton lately, I know there's a projection. I think I would go Graham Barton if you made me choose right now.
Okay.
All right, but good question there, Brian. And it may be something Pittsburgh is encountering. I think what they do at center, what they don't do at center, will be the top story that'll build the framework of this entire draft class.
I have not gone back and watched his center snaps.
I hadn't gone back to watch because it's tough, though, because it was his freshman year, and it's like a player develops and evolves so much. So there's a use in it, I'm sure. It was unfortunate he had gotten hurt late in the season. He was supposed to be at the Senior Bowl and didn't get to play because of, a lower body injury that he had. So you wish you could have gotten to see present-day center reps, so it does make that a projection.
Okay.
All right, got a $5 super chat from Ron Burgundy 79. Says, hey, Dave and Alex, haven't had a chance to listen to the pod today. Have the Steelers brought any centers in-house for visits, including late-round guys? Well, our list is pretty incomplete right now, less than half, but I don't believe any centers have been brought in. The names who have been brought in from the O-line have been tackles, correct, Dave?
I haven't looked at it here in the last little bit. I'll take your word
Mims,
for it.
Fuaga, and I think Travis Glover, who I project to go to guard. He played some guard at Georgia State, later round guy. But those are the three linemen that we know who have been or will be brought in for visits.
Yeah, and I know there was a report about Frazier, but then the tweet got deleted. But you would, I mean, he would be a local. He would qualify as a local. You would think that would happen at some point here. You would think Jackson Powers Johnson would be brought in, and you know, once again, you know, we have it. It feels like the list is a little less complete than it normally is this time of the off season, although it is just April 1st. We got a whole month to go. We'll see if it starts filling up with names. We know Malachi Corley's in town today, according to his Instagram, wide receiver out of Western Kentucky. But yeah, I don't think they've brought in any centers, at least that we know of yet. That doesn't mean they haven't been brought in. Sure. We just, you know, hasn't been reported yet.
Yeah, the team typically would announce the visits, and they are not doing that so far, don't appear to be doing that this year, unfortunately. Probably the best. If I was a team, I wouldn't necessarily tell the whole world publicly who I'm visiting with, but it's helpful for us.
Right.
All right, we'll go back here to the questions. Mike Edessa going back to center, and just quick note as well, my third mock draft will go up in the morning on Seals Depot. Dave and I will discuss it on the Wednesday podcast, so if you want to check out my mock draft, that'll be tomorrow morning at 8:30 a.m. Eastern Time. Mike says, let's talk Van Pran Granger. Good center conversation on the pod today, but you did not discuss him. I don't think he's very good or strong, but he seems to be the consensus fourth best. Do you think he fits? Pick 98. The big concern I have with Van Pran Granger is that lack of length, and I don't like love to use one singular number as a demerit, but I mean, that is historically, you know, stubby, I guess you could say, what, 31 3/8, and on tape there's balance issues, on the ground issues, and for a Pat Meyer system where this may be less applicable for center than it is, say, for tackle, but where you want to be physical and aggressive and not give ground and pass pro, and he prioritizes length because of it. I know centers aren't typically the longest guys in the world, but that gives me a lot of pause with Van Pran Granger.
Yeah, and the hand size as well, too, whereas you're talking about a guy like Frazier's got, what is his hands? 10 7/8 versus 9 1/2. So, you know, that's another demerit. I've watched one game on him, so that's another one that I'm going to be pulling up to go a little bit deeper into him. But it feels like he's more of a fourth round.
It seems to be. I mean, 98 and what's their fourth round pick, 119, not a big difference there in terms of the number of selections. But I know Dane Brugler, this was a while ago, but he had tweeted that the draft Nick community, draft media, was higher on Van Pran Granger than the NFL community was. And so I think it's a clear drop off after, I think, Barton, Powers Johnson, and Frazier to that next tier, which would include Van Pran Granger, but that becomes Mike Tomlin had that comment during league meetings. There's a couple of plug and play guys, but after that, there's not. And I wonder if Van Pran Granger's on the other side of the not plug and play type.
Yeah, good point.
All right, go back to the questions here as there's one out in the bottom of the ninth inning for the Pirates, trying to close this one out. Let's see. Jared says, thanks for the Q&A, fellas. Walk the Mock was a blast as well. Keep the great content coming. Thank you, Jared. Appreciate the support tonight and on Saturday.
How many did you have turnout for that?
I think max. It was over 400 or right around there. So really good turnout. It's always a highlight. And again, we'll do one more, hopefully a 3-round version. So it's a little more full, a little more complete of days 1 and 2 at some point before the actual draft kicks off. Also, Shadow Dark 6997 is here, and Jason is here as well. So appreciate
you do that.
Guys.
You do those without loading up on caffeine too.
Yeah, just my own little internal energy, just battling it up, battling the whole chat and the whole draft. And Russ is here as well. Had a question: do we have a chance to draft Andre, Sam, and Cam? Not entirely sure who Cam is, Russ. If you can clarify, Sam is the LSU safety that Ike Taylor worked out at LSU's Pro Day. Guy that I profiled. Good tape, interesting story, but an older prospect. He's really old, 25, about to be 26 years old, with some athletic limitations, some testing, and some size concerns as well. So I think he's worth drafting as a special teams kind of guy, but when you're 25, you know, you're capped in terms of how high you can justify that player, because it's really a slam dunk one contract type of player. All
right,
Dave D. From a scheme standpoint, the offensive ads seem to be odd fits for Arthur Smith's offense. He's saying that Wilson, Fields outside the number, over middle of the field throwers, Watkins plus. Do you think the offense may look different than normal? than a normal Arthur Smith offense. Yeah, I think there'll be a blend. I don't think it's going to be his entire offense copy and pasted towards, you know, how it'll work in Pittsburgh. There's going to be, I think, a marriage between the two ends of things. Like even in Atlanta in 21, you had Matt Ryan, and Smith's offense is typically like a bit more mobile quarterback, but you adjust to what you have. So, yeah, I think there'll be a blend between what Smith has done and what Pittsburgh's currently constructed to do.
Yeah, and I think, like we said on the podcast this morning, too, you would expect to see some of that play pass and utilize some of that mobility of the quarterbacks, get some kind of half-field levels type reads. Because, yeah, and his question, you know, talking about, you know, neither one of these two have been exceptional middle length in the middle of the field. You would hope to add in some more type rhythm type stuff to take advantage of that. Obviously, the better the running game is, and maybe you can get the quarterback under center and do some, maybe you can get us some second and four, second and three type situations quite a bit, and have some of these linebackers pushing up and, you know, attack and play action, and maybe open up that middle of that intermediate area of the field. Look, here's the thing. Not going to sit here and say this is all going to go great at the quarterback position, but based on what we've seen the last couple of years, and based on the skill sets that Russell Wilson and or Justin Fields have exhibited so far, and I mean, red zone particularly, we spent a little bit of time talking about some of those touchdowns last season both those guys had. That in and of itself, plus the deep ball aspect with the arm strength that both these quarterbacks have, add some promise there. The biggest thing is you know, as Alex just said, watching Arthur Smith try to marry skill sets of his players to what he wants to do offensively. And, boy, eliminating those negative plays, those, mm-hmm. all those sacks and, you know, Russell Wilson running around back there and losing the football, those kind of things there. So obviously you hope the defense is able to play on the level, if not better than last year. And, you know, you're not turning the football over. You're staying away from the negative plays. But, I mean, I don't know how you can't be excited to at least see what happens on offense this year.
Yeah, and I think, you know, Wilson, his play action numbers were pretty strong, correct? And so you've seen some success there, and they've done it, you know, they're more apt to utilizing play action. They ran under center a lot in Denver. And play action does not always have to be middle of the field. It can be a play action deep shot. It can be a play action over route to one third of the field towards the sideline. So obviously, yes, Smith's offenses do typically use more, you know, glance routes and digs and middle of the field type stuff, some yak opportunity things. But I watching the tape, I didn't see Wilson that he was unable or inaccurate or incapable of making those types of throws. Those offenses may have been designed more with your outside receivers in Denver last year in, you know, Sutton and Judy. The offense went there. They traded, Noah Fant to Seattle as part of the Wilson deal. So you lost a tight end over the middle. They didn't have a tremendous slot receiver last year. So there's probably some offensive construction of why that ball didn't go over the middle, much like it's been constructed in Pittsburgh.
Right.
All right, next question is a super chat from Athan Jamal. I probably said that terribly incorrectly, so I apologize, but we appreciate the $5 super chat. Says, how many years do you think we're away from actually being a Lombardi threat? That's such a tough question.
Yeah.
I don't think it's this year. I'm not going to call Pittsburgh, despite, I think, moving the ball forward overall. I think this is the year they can be a playoff victory threat, which I know is not the ultimate goal, but you got to go this year, see what the quarterbacks do, and that kind of determines the answer.
Well, I mean, you're coming off of what at least looks to be a promising draft class from last year. And you know, Mike Tomlin will get into training camp, and he'll be asked about those second year players, and he'll give the canned answer. We expect these guys to make the jump in the second season, and hopefully that happens. And it'd be nice to follow it up with another draft class this year that contributes on the same level, or if not even more than the one did last year and all. And if you can do that, if you can sort out the quarterback situation and get some promise there, then potentially, you know, a year from now, you know, if the quarterback, the biggest fear is here, you don't, you don't come out of this season A, with a playoff victory, at least that, and having your quarterback question answered for at least another season.
Sure. This is the year to really find that out and hopefully have confidence in who your quarterback of the future is. And I don't know, there's no guarantee that occurs, but that's what you're trying to fact find this year. Is it Wilson? Is it Fields? Or are you starting this process all over for the 2025 offseason? Reminder to you guys, if you guys could like the live stream, would appreciate that. Our next question comes from Carly McAdams, who says, why are the Steelers visiting with Michael Penix Jr.? That was reported late last week. Penix telling reporters at his pro day workout, he's got multiple visits, including Pittsburgh, sometime this month. I think it's some due diligence aspect of it. He's a guy where you're not quite sure where he'll fall if he goes into day two after that run on first round quarterbacks. And I think Pittsburgh wants to continually scout the position, be familiar with the guys who are coming out, and stay sharp, because you don't know if Wilson or Fields will be your long-term guys. The season may go awry, and you're kind of looking at next year's class as well. So, yeah, I think there's some thought there if he does fall. I mean, Wilson, one-year deal, Fields, if his options decline, be a free agent after this season. I think it's just really kind of generally due diligence on the position.
Yeah, and maybe it's just, you know, maybe where he played, you didn't get a good look scouting at him throughout the season. I mean, obviously they send scouts all over the United States and all, but with him playing way up northwest, maybe you didn't get as much exposure to him as you wanted, even though he was at the Senior Bowl and all like that. But maybe you just like to get him. Maybe you have questions about him, but on the flip side, we just see what just happened with Justin Fields here and how they, you know, sort of circled back, and the Pirates won. Raise the Jolly Roger.
Oh, nice. Chapman closed it out.
Yeah, got it there. So, do I think that they're going to be drafting a quarterback, especially a guy like Penix? Mm-hmm. I think there's a possibility they draft a quarterback later still in this draft. Although you've got three under contract right now at this point. I don't think it's totally out of the question that you get one, you know, sixth, seventh round or something like that. But I view it more as a fact-finding part of the process here with him.
Yeah, I think so too. And you never know, as you like to say, years down the road, you dust off that old interview file you have on Penix and maybe it becomes a free agent. And so there's that aspect of it as well. Got a $10 super chat from Kevin the Elder God. I know Connor Williams has the injury concern, but is there an outside chance maybe the Steelers sign him? Roll with Herbig until he's healthy, and maybe he'll come on a cheap deal. Dave, what do you think? It just seems like so dicey and so not like a great outcome is going to come from that.
Yeah, and the thing with him, at least the last couple of reports, I haven't dug deep into Connor, but it you know, it feels like that was quite significant injury that he's trying to overcome. And you would obviously worry about that, even if he is ready by week one of the season. And, you know, a guy like Herbig obviously doesn't have a lot of NFL experience at the center position overall. And it feels kind of dicey. Is it out of the question that you sign, you know, say Connor gets himself healthy in the next couple of weeks, enough where you have, you know, can get him on a very cheap contract to at least come in and maybe mentor and keep the seat, you know, warm at the start there with hopefully whoever you draft. Yeah, I'm not going to rule that out, but it certainly does feel like you need to take a good shot at a center in a draft this year.
Yeah, if your approach is, let's hope our guard can play center and our center can play it all and be healthy, it's just a really bad plan for such an important position that has not been where it needs to be in really two of the last 3 years. So I think there's got to be a better solution than that. You know, could they show interest when he gets healthy and you have him compete with a rookie pick? You know, maybe. But if that's your two guys, your two-horse race of Herbig and Williams, that's a really mismanagement of the position. All right, then Russ was saying about clarifying Cam as in Cam Hart from Notre Dame, the corner. Yeah, potentially. Big, long guy. Checks the general frame Pittsburgh's been gravitating towards. Mid-round option. That is a possibility, Russ.
Yeah, but who did they even send to that pro day?
Notre Dame pro day. I would have to check. I don't know who was there.
I thought they would have more interest in him, at least visible, than what we're seeing so far.
Yeah,
and
that's
it,
fair.
You know, it doesn't mean that they're not interested in them. Just who was at the Notre Dame Pro Day? It seemed like I was the one that
Stan Colbert that. There. Stan Colbert there.
I'm trying to scroll real quick to see who
I know
was
Grady
there.
Brown wasn't there, because we didn't see Grady Brown anywhere, which I thought was
Dan Colbert was the only one I think we spotted there.
Okay. I mean, that's...
Oh, yeah, I remember. I pulled that. I got on Peacock and watched that whole damn thing. Scanned through that whole damn thing, and only person I saw there was Dan Colbert.
The things we do for you guys. Appreciate the Pro Day Tracker. No, it's a good time. It's a lot of fun this year trying to Blues Clues it out. Ken says, do you really think the Steelers are going to start three players on the O-line that are rookies or first-year players at both tackle spots and center? It just does not seem likely. So that'd be in reference to the rookie center, a rookie tackle, and I guess he's saying about Broderick Jones moving over. I mean, he'd be in his second year, first-year at left tackle, I guess is what he's saying. I mean, they've retooled this O-line before, and it's less about it's about just getting the best five guys for now and for the future as well. So point taken on maybe potential youth there, but what are your alternatives? I mean, you know, you got to get somebody to play center, and I don't know internally what you're going to go with now. And again, I want to move Broderick Jones over to left tackle.
When they rolled out Pouncey in 2010 in week one, were there any other rookies on that line? Do you remember?
I don't, but I would have to go research it. I really
I'm
going to
pull
you.
It up right now. Okay. It was Max Starks at left tackle, Chris Kimuatu at left guard, Marquise Pouncey at center, Trey Essex at right guard, and Flozo Adams at right tackle.
So only rookie was Pouncey.
Let me see who was wasn't Tony Hills a rookie that year?
He was
inactive for that game. Ramon Foster was a rookie that year. He was inactive. You care to take a stab at the other offensive linemen? I've already given you Starks, Kimuatu, Pouncey, Essex, Adams. Tony Hills was on the roster, inactive that first game. Ramon Foster was inactive that first game. Who else, Alex, was on that roster as far as offensive linemen? We need two more names there.
I don't think I'll have the correct answers. I do. Doug Ligursky, was he one of them? Okay,
yes,
Ligursky.
Yes.
I just wasn't sure where his timeline was. The other, I think he was gone at this point, and he'd be starting, so probably not, but Willie Colon?
No.
The other one.
Think butt block.
Jonathan Scott.
Yeah.
Who could forget the butt block of Jonathan Scott?
Yeah. God bless old game books.
Yeah. So, yeah, again, it's a fair, but to me, it's about just collecting the talent, maximizing your talent, and that's the focus of team building. I understand the pitfalls of potential rookies and the newness of this offense overall, but we didn't think they would have a whole new quarterback room, and yet here we are. So that's your mission. Build the best talent that you can.
Roll the best five out there.
Yeah, and again, Broderick Jones would not be a rookie. Be you know, he's played left tackle in Georgia, so I understand he'd be a young guy, but it's really two new faces to that offensive line. All right, next question will come from really more of a...
You remember who started that first game at quarterback?
Dennis Dixon?
Yep, that was the game against the Falcons.
Is that the Mendenhall walk-off overtime?
You would be correct, sir. All 50-yard right. run.
There you go. Steel Pastor, more of a comment. Well, one thing appears certain. We either need to go center in round one, or if we go offensive tackle in round one, we need to have several rearranged trades to move up in round two. Yeah, I mean, again, if center is not the choice in round one, I get it. But, you know, when you go into day two, you sit there and say, okay, who are the centers left and who needs a center? And you're working the phones because you do not want to be left holding that bag.
Yeah, but straight, you know, center's a position. It gets pushed down, though, you know.
I know, but you want to bank everything on that, that history?
Yeah,
maybe.
That's true, too.
It's a risky proposition.
But there's not, you just don't push the button and make a trade, either. You know?
You don't, absolutely. And if you trade that, you're trading more capital, and what do you do at receiver and corner and D-line and inside linebacker? Like, they're going to draft an inside linebacker. Aaron Curry's not scouring Central America, Central United States to find an off-ball linebacker. He's been at all these places. All right, next question comes from Jack, who says, if you had to pick one all-time and one current Steeler to host on the podcast, who would it be? I assume when you say to host on the podcast, to interview, I think we got to talk to Dick LeBeau. I know it's already occurred, but like that was a treat, and maybe we'll get to talk to him again sometime in the near future. Who else would you want to have a discussion with?
Oh, yeah, I'd like to have a conversation with Troy. That'd be fun.
Yeah, I think so, too. I'm trying to think who I would want to talk to. Yeah, Troy's a great one overall. I mean, anybody from the 70s that you could, you know, talk to, if you could get
Joe Green, Jack Lambert,
or Joe Green. Yeah, I mean, anything like that, I think would be just a treasure trove of history and great stories to share. Mm-hmm. All right, let's see. Jason says, my mentality is to take Mims if he's still there and then trade up 5 to 10 spots from 51 to get Frazier. What say Yinz? Yeah, that kind of goes into Steel Pastor's comment about, you know, if you don't go center in round one, trading up. But as Dave said, you know, it takes two to tango. And what if Frazier goes at 38, something like that. You know, just you never know how a draft will shake out. Justin, who are your favorite day two wide receivers? Any kind of non-first round receivers, Dave, that have your eye?
Let me pull up the list here.
You like Roman Wilson from Michigan when she was a fan of him?
Yeah, and I think they like him as well, too. The Florida kid, Ricky Pearsall, I think has some good day two value to him. Brian Thomas going to fall out of the first round?
I'd be a little surprised, but given the depth of the class, they can't all go in the top 32. He might be a later first round pick, though, last 5-7 selections.
Let's see who else is on the list here that could be potentially. Ladd's going to fall. Is Ladd going to fall out of the first round?
I think so, but he'd probably be my answer for my favorite day two receiver, just a natural separator, route runner, yak, and there were questions about his speed, and he ran, 4.39 at the combine, so I think the speed's there, too.
I think Malachi will definitely be there on day two, and they've got obvious interest in him, for sure. I think even despite him blazing it at the combine, I think the other Texas kid, but he is a little bit on the small side, right?
Xavier Worthy.
Yeah,
he's pretty tiny, but 4.21 is 4.21.
All right.
He may go first round, though. It's hard to say.
You can't teach speed. When's the last time a 165-pound wide receiver went first round?
Ooh, that's a good question. Was DeSean Jackson a first round pick? Is he first rounder out of Cal?
How much did he weigh?
He was light. I don't know if he was that light, but he was definitely, you know, he never was that heavy in his career, maybe 170 pounds. But obviously, just 165 in general is rare.
Yeah, 175. I don't know if that was his, what was his, do they have his combine stuff here? 169, it looks like, maybe at his combine for DeSean. And he was, he was a second round guy.
He was second round. Okay.
Yeah, pick 49 overall, 2008.
Chat saying Devontae Smith a couple years ago from Bama. Yeah, good point. But it's rare, obviously.
Right.
David Putt has a $10 super chat. It just says 10. So we thank you so much, David, for the super chat. If you have a question, let us know. If you don't and just wanted to send us a super chat, we appreciate that very much. But if you have a question, drop it in the chat, and we'll be sure to look for it. All right, let me go back up and try to find some more questions. Again, a lot of center discussion, which I think is well within reason to ask one of my biggest questions and, frankly, concerns right now. Brian says, is there a day three inside linebacker that you guys like? Also, is there a better Yinzer name than Steel Chambers? No, there is not. That is a perfect name, and he was at Ohio State. Aaron Curry was there to watch him and Tommy Eichenberg work. Day three, awful. I'm not big on the inside linebacker class in general. I mean, I think Trevin Wallace from Kentucky, who's kind of a downhill hitter, but tested well, good athlete, is interesting. But none of those off-ball linebackers really grabbed me. I think that's why Pittsburgh was also a bit more aggressive about getting a Patrick Queen in free agency.
Yeah, they've shown obvious interest in, like you said, Wallace out of Kentucky, and the North Carolina kid Cedric Gray seems to have their interest. Hard to determine which one in particular, if not both from Ohio State there. But yeah, I'm with you. Now, was it the Buffalo kid that they have interest in? He wasn't even a combine invite, was he?
No, I think he's maybe late day three undrafted. I'll pull up the article we wrote earlier, but He's, you know, low-level linebacker.
What's interesting here is you, I mean, and it's not surprising, especially probably when we get to the portion of the offseason of the Alex Cazorla, what they look for. Trayvon Wallace, 6 foot one and 1'8", 237. Gray, 6 foot one and a half, 234. Who was the other one? Chambers, mm-hmm. 6 foot 3/4, 226.
And then Eichenberg.
Eichenberg is the tallest of the bunch. They tend to shy away from those taller inside linebackers for some reason.
But how many of those guys even exist anymore? I feel like everybody's right. Like 5'11 to 6'1.
I don't know. Junior Colson out of Michigan, 6 foot two and a quarter, yeah. And Mike Tomlin was chatting him up at that pro day.
Okay, that's another good name not a day three guy in all likelihood, but a good name to mention. We haven't talked about much with that off ball linebacker group.
Right.
So a couple of names there, hopefully for you, Brian. But I just want that class is super impressive overall.
Michael Barrett's 5 foot 11, 3/8, 233 out of Michigan.
Okay. So a couple names there. Again, I think they will draft somebody given just how active Aaron Curry has been this year. Tanner Kramer, how early would you feasibly draft Mason Smith for ideal size and upside? Second of our third round picks. I think either third round pick, not a big difference between 84 and 98, is probably worthwhile on him. And that's about where he's projected to go right now. He's a developmental guy, needs a year. But in theory, you get a year of kind of seasoning, rotational snaps. He replaces Ogunjobi by 2025. That's kind of in my head of how that would go with him.
All right, so let me write this down. Tackle, first round, center, second round, Mason Smith, somewhere, one of those two third rounders, right? And mm-hmm. then a wide receiver with the other one. Is that what you're saying?
That's how, lock it in. Write it in pen. Write it. Don't just write it. Write it in pen.
But, no, I'm going to put this in pencil here.
But yeah, I think either third round pick is probably a reasonable place to take a shot on Mason Smith. He just got to develop. He's just unrefined right now.
Yeah, either him or Rook there, maybe.
Yeah, it feels like Rook might go earlier just because it's a more complete body of work overall and just kind of a little less raw. But maybe he slips into that 84 category. All right, David put, okay, there he is. He figured out the Super Chat is his question. And again, thank you for that. David says, hey, just figuring out the Super Chat stuff. What are the odds that Dylan Clark gets a good look at right tackle? I'm glad you mentioned him. I'm a big fan of Dylan Cook, somebody that I want to watch in year two. I think it's a really critical year for him. You know, in terms of starter, that's probably pushing it to kind of bank on that. But swing tackle and competing and having, you know, chance to be next man up, if Cook's able to continue how he impressed so much in the summer last year, that's, I think, where he could land for week one.
I tell you, you know, small victories, obviously, when you go to try to predict every year a 53-man roster, at least the initial one, it's tough. It should be a little bit easier, or maybe not, because they're getting rid of that. They're allowing teams to put two guys on IR before having to do all that nonsense, the day or two after mm-hmm. it and all like that. But, I mean, I think you and I both agree from watching the preseason games and you reporting from training camp. If there was one guy that a lot of people probably didn't have making the 53 that we did, that, and you know, just from seeing him in preseason and seeing his position usage, it was Dylan Cook there. Now, obviously, he didn't. He only dressed for one game.
I believe you're right.
Last year, and that was due to the was it who sat
when
down
Dan Moore
there?
Got hurt.
Yeah, maybe it was the week that Dan Moore missed or something like that. But they liked him enough that they kept him on the 53 last year. So that in and of itself means a lot. Obviously, going to have more experience coming into this camp this year. Now, does that mean he's guaranteed a roster spot? No, but. I mean, this is a team that seems tackle poor as we sit here right now. So he is going to be a guy, I think, to pay attention to. Does he get more snaps at tackle? Does he get more snaps at guard? You got to like at least his chances from where we sit right now, making the 53 again.
For sure. Again, see how the draft, things settle out, and if they draft a tackle, that'll change things. But he's a guy that's still pretty new to playing O-line, was a quarterback in college and got converted. He's athletic, uses his hands well. He impressed. It works way up the ladder last year. As you said, played some left guard late in the preseason. I thought he even looked good there. So maybe there's even additional positional versatility. But just a guy with traits and tools. Now you want to season that and refine him a whole year with the team, whole offseason program, start to finish. All that should be really valuable for Dylan Cook.
Yeah, who asked that?
That was David. David.
Dave, David. You can bet that I'll be asking for updates on Dylan Cook from Alex quite a bit during the special edition training camp podcast.
And I will be providing them for sure. Got a $5 super chat from Dead Planet. Thank you for being to another one of the live streams here. Says, why would it be so crazy for the Steelers, especially under Khan, to take a quarterback in a quarterback-heavy class when Russell was 35 and Fields was had for a sixth? I can get the argument, but I think you're trying to win now. There's an urgency this year, and that's why you're seeing this team make some of the moves that they have at quarterback and Patrick Queen, etc. And so you want to build up around those guys. And with so many other holes, I do think Pittsburgh, despite I think having an overall productive offseason, there's a lot of holes on this roster right now, Dave, and you got to fill those as opposed to a quarterback. If somebody falls, you know, then you have that conversation, but you got to focus on winning and winning right now.
Yeah, it feels like a luxury there in the middle rounds. Once again, I'm not going to sit here and say, oh no, there's no way that they, you know, draft. I've learned over the years about speaking in absolutes like that. I'll say this though. I mean, with the looking like they having, enough interest to bring Penix in, if they were going to draft, say he's one of the ones that slide, and you go back to that draft a couple of years ago where, you know, all of us thought all these quarterbacks were going to go in the first round, and then you get past Kenny Pickett and you're waiting then, and you see these guys fall. If Penix is one of those guys that fall, and if they did, you know, we got a lot of ifs involved here, then I could see potentially Penix being that guy if they went that route. I'm not personally expecting it to happen. Mm-hmm. Once again, I think if they do draft a quarterback at all this year, to me, it feels like round six or seven is when you would see that happen.
Yeah, I'm with you. Again, I think 2024, the season is to evaluate Wilson and Fields, and then if they're not the guy for one reason or another, you look at 2025. So don't like to rule things out, but I think Pittsburgh, they're feeling the weight of no playoff wins in, you know, 7 years, and their mission is to at least, again, their mission is to always win the Super Bowl, of course, but at the least to win a playoff game and get off that schneid.
Yeah, and look, you wouldn't think that this team's going to pick up the fifth-year option this May on Justin Fields. And assuming that happens, I think what you're hoping for is one of Russell Wilson or Justin Fields forces your hand to, you know, either work out a very lucrative deal before next year's franchise tag or forces you into franchise tag in one of them.
Agreed. Good problems to have if that's where Pittsburgh is sitting after the season ends. Russ Obenstein asking, would you guys bring back Rowe and Miles Jack? Would you sign Bud Dupree? So would you bring back any of these ex-Steelers, Dave?
If I could get Rowe back on a veteran benefit contract tomorrow, I'd do it. Everybody else, I'll pass on. Look, I mean, if Bud Dupree was willing to come in and compete on a veteran benefit contract, I'd be willing to do that. But he would have to. It would feel like he'd absolutely have to win that number three spot, you know, because he's not going to give you anything on special teams or anything along those lines. Can somebody else like a Moon, you know, you went out and we'll see obviously what happens the rest of the way. I don't expect them to draft an edge, but there'll probably be another edge or two as an undrafted guy. And we'll see after the draft, how many veterans are out there looking for jobs. I wouldn't do anything unless any of those guys wanted to sign right now on a veteran benefit contract. I'd be okay with that, but other than that, I'm probably waiting until after the draft. I really feel like the ship has sailed on. I think Marcus Golden was a better player than Bud Dupree was last year. Okay. You know, as far as that goes, there. So, but I mean, Rowe obviously showed you something in his limited time. And once again, you know, how much if he's not going to be a starter for you, what could you get out of him on special teams play? Of all those names mentioned, though, I would be more apt to see if I could get Rose signed to a veteran benefit contract right now would be my stab at that.
I would be most interested in Rowe, but I really don't have a lot of interest in bringing any of those guys back. I thought Rowe played a valuable role last year, but I wanted to get younger and just overall more athletic at the position. You have Elliott, you know, again, post-draft, take a look at your roster. These guys will probably still be out there. You evaluate, but, you know, I think you're going with kind of the guys that you have right now. What do you think, just quickly, Dave, Dean Lowry getting a 2-year deal? As opposed to that 1-year contract. Surprised me.
Yeah, that surprised me. I thought that would come in as a veteran benefit contract. I think it should have come in at a veteran benefit contract. But you did re-sign Montrevious Adams to a 2-year, what was it, $5.25 million contract. So if you went that route, you wanted to, and you'd like Lowry, and obviously they liked him enough back in 2016, I think, when they brought him in for a pre-draft visit, and they had to do something after letting Armand Watts walk off this offseason. So we'll wait, obviously, now to see the numbers. I would imagine that transaction officially hit the sheet this afternoon. And if that's the case, it should probably be about 48 hours before we see the details of that deal, if not sooner. I'm imagining, now that we know that it's a 2-year deal, I could very easily picture it matching the exact deal that Montrevious Adams got. And if that's the case, the cap hit should probably be around $2.1 million or so, which won't kill you. It's not the end of the world signing him to a 2-year deal, as long as this thing doesn't come in like 2 years, $7.5 million or something like that. I was surprised it's not a veteran benefit contract. But like I did say, if it's not that, I don't see it being too far off of a cap charge of what that would have cost you. So probably less than $1 million more than the cap hit would have been on a veteran benefit deal.
Sure, and even though you don't get the cap benefit of the veteran, you know, benefit contract structure, it's still functionally a 1-year deal. It doesn't play well this year, you dump them and you move on without much of a cost.
Right, just like Montrevious Adams.
Right, right. All right, Mike Edesso asking about the Cam Sutton situation. He's now been released from jail. The felony charge or warrant's now been downgraded to a misdemeanor, asking about a potential return post draft. If you don't get a slot option, there's still a lot of still a lot of hairiness with it. You're still potentially subject to NFL suspension based on their domestic violence policy. So I think you let the legal situation play out, and by then you're probably close to the season starting. You know, I think bringing back a Patrick Peterson is more likely. Could Sutton play again based on this? Maybe the chances of him playing in the NFL again at some point next year have gone up, but I think for right now, you're hands off.
Yeah, I think you just got to watch this continue to play out with him.
For sure. Carlos asking, is there a guy currently on the roster you think could be traded during the draft this year? I don't think during. I think after Deontay got dealt, that's kind of the one name that you had circled, okay, when he could get moved. And, of course, there was the roster bonus situation with him, why he got moved relatively early. I think Leal is a potential guy come trade or camp cutdown time, but probably not during the draft.
Although, you know, look what they got. What is the value with Leal right now?
Like Kendrick Green. Yeah. Light, conditional seventh round pick.
Yeah. Yeah. He's going to have to stay healthy and all like that. Trying to scroll through to see who else maybe.
Yeah. I mean, some will say Dan Moore. If you get a tackle, and let's say Broderick Jones is your left tackle and, you know, rookie's your right tackle. Not during the draft, I wouldn't say. I mean, I'm still thinking of the mindset of, like, you know, August, September, right before your cutdowns.
Yeah, I would be surprised if anybody on this roster right now would get traded during the draft.
I do, too. It's rare in general. It does happen occasionally. A.J. Brown got dealt. But in last time a Steelers player got traded during a draft, has that ever even happened before? I couldn't tell you. I couldn't give you a name.
Oh,
that's a fun little fun post for you to rabbit hole to go down after our live stream, Dave.
Yeah, you'd make me do that, wouldn't you?
I'm going to make you do that. Had a question. There was somebody that had a question about any more contextualizations you're going to do. If you missed it, Dave has had the articles on Justin Fields and Russell Wilson. If that's more pointed towards the draft, I'm not sure if Dave has probably more post draft once the picks come in and you can really, it's worth your while to really go down this crazy rabbit hole. It's probably, I think, when Dave will do those.
Yeah, more than likely. That's, you know, I'll probably play around with some more Fields and Russell Wilson stuff or something like that. But
ooh, Martavis Bryant. He was traded during the draft, wasn't he? Dave D.
Yeah, to the Raiders. That's good pull. That's a good call. That's a good pull,
Dave D. So that is a relatively recent example and one that Pittsburgh, a trade that Pittsburgh won handsomely. The Rattlesnake Ranch was asking about Terrell Edmonds. Why not sign him for the minimum? I mean, you could. I'm not opposed to that, but you have Elliott, which is very similar in skill set to Terrell Edmonds.
Yeah, look, there's not many players I wouldn't bring in on a veteran benefit contract, you know, especially one that I think still has a little special teams value left in him in Edmonds.
Yeah, for sure. Quality Koloss says, wow, I made another live stream. Love listening to Yins while I drive on the road. Appreciate you, KK, and thanks for listening, as always, to these live streams. Ashton G, is it possible for a player to fail a physical but be brought back down the line? Patrick Peterson, Keanu Neal, etc. Peterson did not fail his physical, correct? There was no failed physical designation with him.
I don't remember there being a failed physical with him, no.
There was with Neal, but to answer the question more broadly, yeah, I don't think there's anything that says that they can't do that if you're healthier down the line and doctors clear you. Really, that's more of just as a, what is even the purpose of that? Just as a clerical thing, the failed physical designation? Is that just a procedure type of thing?
I think it's more procedural than anything, and then also opens up, I guess, that, what do they call that? The injury benefit aspect of things a player can file for once or something like that.
Good point.
Long story short, I don't think you can. If the player can't pass a physical, you got to note it.
Okay.
I think it's clerical than anything. I haven't gone way down that rabbit hole, you know, in the past, but and I think it'll allow, you know, it's letting teams know that if they wanted to claim them, that, you know, he's not 100% healthy, those kind of things.
Sure. Dave D was asking a question a bit earlier. Is there a reason Omar seems to be fine going into the draft with so many glaring needs, have a hard time seeing how they attack all needs without trading down? Thanks for answering both my questions today.
Well, yeah. Let's watch how it plays out. Still, we still got, you know, a couple weeks to go, but I mean, obviously the list of free agents, quality free agents, has dwindled quite a bit too. So, I mean, like most listing, I would have liked a better quality wide receiver and a better quality center on this team at this point.
Yeah, I think Dave has a good point. You never know what Khan has next. I mean, assuming there is no big surprise move coming, and it could, but do you feel like Pittsburgh will be able to adequately address all their needs with their current slate of draft picks as things stand right now?
Sure doesn't feel like it. Was no. Brian Leftwich traded during the 2010? He was an acquisition, though, wasn't he? In first time in 2010. You sent me down a rabbit hole.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. Was he not? Because he had bounced on and off, I think, on the roster.
I can't remember if he came or went in that particular year.
I'd have to look it up. I don't have. I'm sure somebody in the chat could answer that, but. Yeah, I'm sending it down the rabbit hole, Dave. That's what I'm here for. Let's see. To answer the question, again, we'll see what happens, but I'm not confident they can fill all their needs as things stand today. Now, why that is, you know, in terms of the center market was pretty hot, and I don't think they wanted to sign a center to big money because there was an intention and a hope to draft somebody, and if you draft somebody in the first, second round, you sign a guy to a $7 million per year contract, then you're in this awkward spot with these kind of two starting caliber type of players. The receiver free agent market to me was not very good overall, and so you were going to go through the draft for that. At slot corner, I don't know. It's a little bit weird how they've handled that. I think they have a backup plan of bringing back a Chandon Sullivan, a Patrick Peterson, somebody like that. So as Dave said, let's get through the draft and kind of see where things stand and go from there.
Or at least get up until the draft to see what the roster looks like here in two, three days, yeah. Something
Or even,
like that.
Even immediately after, the week after, right. Because again, you see a lot of that movement. DeMonte Casey signed Sunday after the draft 2 years ago, Keanu Neal last year. In past years, you got Larry Ogunjobi in June, Quan Alexander in camp last year. So you do get some of that late offseason movement.
And remember, and not that it's going to play heavily, I don't think, especially the way the balance sheet looks right now. The first Monday after the draft is the end of what they call the compensatory free agent period. That's why you'll see a lot of times, you know, of teams of that might have their eyes on players for more than minimum, guys that could actually maybe impact their balance sheet where it comes to compensatory free agents. You'll see them hold off on signing these guys until right after the draft, because the end of the compensatory free agent signing period is that first Monday, I think at 4 o'clock after the draft. After that point, players that you sign do not count in the compensatory compensatory pick formula.
Okay, that is good to note, and that, again, is one reason why I think you'll see more activity across the league, but potentially for Pittsburgh post-draft, because you know who your rookie class is, what needs are still outstanding, and there is more, although it probably doesn't matter for Pittsburgh because they're not counting on comp picks for 25, but the point being there's just more action that occurs post-draft. All right, kind of moving around here, somebody asking about Joe Milton. Do you like him? He's got an arm, but that's kind of it to me. I'll pass. Yeah. I'll pass on that. Let's see, Ken, why can't we trade for a right tackle instead of drafting one? It would solve a lot of problems filling needs in the draft, and there will likely be starter quality tackles displaced on rosters by rookies. I don't know, tackles are a pretty precious commodity. Those guys don't appear too often. I know Ken was asking and talking about Jack Conklin in a comment earlier, but Conklin with the injury concerns has me pretty scared.
Yeah, what kind of deal is he on right now?
He was on a big deal from Cleveland. He's been hurt so much, though. He may get cut here. You know, Daywon Jones impressed last year before he got hurt, too. So I imagine Conklin stays may be numbered.
Yeah, let's see, with him.
You're not trained for him. He'd be a sign, probably, kind of situation.
Yeah, I mean, they doesn't look like there's a lot. No, I guess there is a lot of dead money for them to eat after all, because I think they had an option bonus that got picked up and scattered out and all like that, and 4.5. Yeah, I mean, you're at 30. You're not. You're gonna wait and see if a guy like that gets cut.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but even still, with the injury concerns he's had, he's played more than 7 games once the last 2 years. Last full season came in 19. I know there's an Arthur Smith connection. Ken was saying with him in Tennessee, but just the injuries are just. Right. That's just a Band-Aid before Jones has to move back to right tackle midseason because Conklin went down. Caleb Whisker, a $5 super chat. Thank you so much, Caleb. He says, hey guys, love your live streams and podcasts. Can you guys share your thoughts on Mike Sanders still? Just seems like a future Steeler. Thanks, guys.
He does.
He does.
He really does. He really does. You know, a little bit undersized, but man, a guy you could probably throw out there in all sub package situations. And for a guy that is a little undersized, very physical, you got to think they like him. I mean, you just got to think, and seems to be just a good kid overall. Mm-hmm. And I think a multi-time captain and a guy that other than his overall height, you know, I checks all the boxes, it feels like.
Yeah, these guys said it well. Scream Steeler, pedigree, production, the ball skill, 6 picks last year, former wide receiver. Pittsburgh's gone down that path with defensive backs before. And even though we're pretty sure Grady Brown was not at that pro day, we know Mike Tomlin was. Was Terrell Austin at that pro day, too?
I think so,
like he was.
Yeah,
so obviously defensive-minded, secondary-minded guys. When Ike Taylor revealed today, he was at Michigan, too. So you got another defensive-minded member of that team at that Michigan pro day. So good comment there, Caleb, and certainly, you know, if he was the pick of 51, I would not bat an eye if he was the guy. Let's see, Rob was asking about what's wrong with Van Pran. We talked about him top of the show. Lack of length and just tape not being as consistent, I think, are kind of the issues there with Van Pran Granger.
Yeah, he's definitely in that fourth or fifth center role, it feels like.
Yeah, I think that's certainly where he's at, so we're talking back end, third round, fourth round. With Van Pran Granger. Let's see if there's any more questions left. We've kind of gone through most of them. James asking about a quarterback, if a Nix or Penix is available in round 2, since they're a fringe first-round talent. If next year stinks, they could end up with a picket reach. Yeah, they could. But again, I think Pittsburgh wants to win now. All the holes to address. I get the point. And if you love a guy and you feel like, okay, this guy you just can't pass on, then you maybe go down that path. But I think Pittsburgh wants to see what they have in Fields and Wilson. They got those guys for a reason. They're excited, and you hope one of those guys will be worth extending out for 2025 and beyond.
Yeah, I concur with everything you said and everything we said earlier about the topic there.
All right, last call for questions. Appreciate you guys being here. A couple minutes left. Is there anything else out there? Rattlesnake Ranch wants Mekhi Becton on a one-year prove-it deal. Again, he's been more left tackle, though, right, than right tackle. Says Kwan's a free agent. Kwan's got to get healthy in rehab.
Right.
Maybe in August. I think he was responding, though, to Russ, though, in terms of hoping that Kwan recovers. So that's, I don't think he was advocating for him to be re-signed there. Any chance we can do a quick 1-2 round mock draft? Next live chat. Maybe. We'll see. But I think I'll just do a dedicated mock draft as the full thing there, Mike. Brandon Ayuk coming, says Daveed Kapoor. Yeah, those rumors will persist until he either resigns up with the Niners or gets traded. But the 49ers publicly are saying he is staying in San Francisco.
Yeah, we went through that whole kind of, it felt like 2 weeks there, and I wrote like 2 or 3 articles about it. And I mean, the Steelers, obviously, if they wanted him bad enough, could make it work. I know the biggest thing, I think the biggest chatter now is what is his work? You know, how big of the deal is he going to get at this point? In several of the articles, I think I wrote, you know, at least $20 million to floor. Some people are thinking, man, this guy's going to probably get $30 million APY. You know,
yeah, that was Brad, I think, from PFF. Mentioned that. Right now, that would make him tied for the highest paid receiver in football with Tyreek Hill at that number.
I mean, don't get me wrong. He's a talented guy, but because Tyreek Hill's at $30 million. So, yeah. I mean, you're talking about making him the highest paid, you know, at least, and you would think he's going to want to beat it by, you know, just a little bit if he got to that point anyway. I don't know. I could envision him being maybe top five, which would put him around 24, 25 million or something like that. But, and to circle back to kind of the things that their GM, John Lynch, said, and obviously Shanahan has said in the last couple of weeks here, I've looked at their financial situation, both the cap and cash situation for the 49ers in another post there. It really feels like they're going to try their best to get him signed. Now, if they don't, obviously, the Steelers would have to have conversations with him ahead of time to try to work out a deal, because you're not going to bring a guy. His goal is to get paid by somebody this offseason, whether it be the 49ers or a team that would trade for him. And it just feels like that might be a little bit too rich overall. And then we haven't even talked about what the compensation would be. And, right. You know, obviously you see what happened with KC and Snead and those kind of things. So it until there's more embers that reignite with this thing, and if rumblings come out that it just doesn't look like the 49ers are going to be able to sign him, it doesn't feel like we should talk about him and the Steelers until something else ignites here.
Yeah, there's no urgency the way that there was with Legarius Sneed, which even that took a month for that franchise tag to trade to Tennessee. So we'll see. We'll keep you posted. But again, if it would have happened, I think it would happen before the draft. Not going to trade him after the draft and really be unable to replenish your depth and find somebody in a receiver, you know, just a ton of receiver talent in this year's class. All right, go through a couple more questions really, really quickly, Dave. Do you think the team could place value on an outside or slot corner if they draft just one in this year's draft? And with someone like Arnold, who could do both, appeal more than Kool-Aid? The more you can do, the better. But I think they want that, you know, if you get a defined outside guy for your long-term future, there's a ton of value in that.
I tell you, is Arnold a dark horse or someone that should get more consideration? I mean, we've obviously named him when going off the short list when it comes to places that Mike Tomlin and Omar Khan have been as far as pro days. You know, I think there's a partial chance that he could be that guy. You know?
Yeah, we have not talked about it much at
20th overall. Is this question more? Could we see this team double dip?
I think he was saying if they only draft one corner, could they value somebody who could play outside and inside to try to fill both slots right now, as opposed to somebody that's more of an outside-only corner?
Yeah, I think that's plausible. I mean, the Kentucky kid, right?
Andrew Phillips, yeah. That's a guy I think that, you know, should gain some buzz, and I think being brought in for a visit at some point here. I think, though, in terms of the early rounds, that versatility is nice, but you're looking at talent, immediate impact, and scheme fit. And I think as you go later into the draft, you start to value versatility and how you kind of impact the roster in different ways. If you're not an immediate starter, that becomes a bit more attractive in the first round. You know, versatility is good, and that's a plus, but you just want somebody that can be the best player to fill an immediate need.
Yeah, well put.
All right. Anything else? Momo of the Ozarks was talking about Limmer and Norzad. Any mid-round centers you like better if all falls through rounds 1 through 3? Yeah, Bo Limmer, interesting. I'm a huge fan of Matt Lee from Miami. I've talked about him a ton. Norzad, super smart. Cornell, was at Cornell before Penn State. So there are centers, but again, are they the plug-and-play types of guys that you're going to, if you draft a fourth-round guy, are you confident in him being your week one starter? That begins to go down the Kendrick Green path to a degree, right, that would make me uncomfortable.
Yeah, it gets a little less, you know, nothing, there's no such thing as a sure thing, but you get that far down the list. You get past Granger and all like that, then yeah, you're down the list at that point.
All right, guys, that's going to do it for Dave and myself. It'll be an archived version of this on Steelers Depot in just a little bit. Thank you guys so much for the great turnout, again, both Saturday and tonight here on Monday. We'll be back in 2 weeks, our last live stream before the draft, and kind of have a finishing touches on that. Be sure to like this video, subscribe to the channel, and be sure to check out the site, SteelersDepot.com. Dave, as always, thank you for your time and insight.
And thank you for moderating this the way you always do. A very good job on that. Thank you for everybody that shows up to these. And great questions as usual. Enjoyed it. Peace and love, everybody.